I mean, how often do you talk to Tony Khan on during these broadcasts?
You know, just watch the match, dude.
I am watching. Dude, I'm calling the friggin' match. Oh, tell me watch the match. I'm calling it. Watch the match, dude. Kiss my ass, dude.
It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered. I'm home.
You like fighting a woman?
You got grown-ass wrestlers in the back going on Twitter.
Come over here and fight me.
Oh, my God. We're only an hour in.
You have legs.
They've made Solo a monster.
I was 99% positive it was just chest up.
No. I want out of my contract if I don't get what I want.
Welcome to episode 864 of the Solo Monster Sounds Of here for Sunday, June 2nd, 2024. I am the Solo Monster, first Sound Of here for the month of June, which means it is almost officially summer. Oh, it's already summer here. It's already 80 degrees in New York, so summer's already here. I got WWE news, I got AEW news, and I got a bunch of questions from you in the mailbag this week, so that is what we are going to be going through, but first, want to give a shout out to our PayPal producers for this week. Your support means the world to me. You can always support on thesolomonster.com. You will see the PayPal link at the top of the page. Want to say thank you to Big B, Bryant Becerra, the Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, who is healing well from his surgery. I'm very happy to hear that, Paul. I hope you are doing well today, my friend. The Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep, and the entire Soep family. Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, Road Warrior, Roderick Welch, Night Stalker, Nayef Alsafar, the Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichert, Best in the Game, Trey Porter, Ms. Madness, Michelle Mills, who also popped up on the SmackDown stream the other night. Hey, Michelle, thank you. Killshot, Keith Hart, and Rebel, Jay Leonard. Congrats on the new gig. Very happy to hear it, my friend. We've had a few people take advantage of the Audible offer that I mentioned last week for Jim Ross's new book, and shout out to JR. I don't know if he's still in the hospital or not, but he's been dealing, it's either a case of the flu or a case of pneumonia. That's why he was not at Double or Nothing, so hopefully he's doing better. I will have a news item, by the way, that you will not believe on Jim Ross. I'll mention that later on at the end of the AEW section, but he has a new book out called Business is About to Pick Up, chronicling 50 of his most iconic calls across 50 chapters. You can get the audiobook for free. You don't have to pay anything. All you have to do is sign up for the 30-day trial of the Audible service using my link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. If you cancel for any reason during the 30 days, before it triggers whatever the membership fee is, you still get to keep the book. It's not a bad deal. And if you're an Amazon Prime member, you actually get two free books. So use audibletrial.com/solomonster for that. You will be able to find me this Saturday coming up. We have another House of Glory show. We're running more shows now than ever. But we're back at the NYC Arena in Queens coming up this Saturday, June 8th. Tickets are still available at hogwrestling.net. We'll be streaming live on Triller TV. It is Mike Santana's Puerto Rican Weekend, celebrating Puerto Rican heritage this weekend coming up, and he will be going one-on-one with the Amazing Red on that show. All that and a lot more. So that's where you can find me. That'll be coming up this Saturday. Hopefully I'll see some of you there. Let's start with WWE. The big development this week in the Janelle Grant sex trafficking lawsuit against Vince McMahon, John Laurinaitis, and WWE is that her lawsuit is now on hold by request of the U.S. Justice Department. Per Bloomberg News, she has agreed to pause her lawsuit as the government conducts its own investigation into McMahon. Her attorney, Ann Callis, had this to say. Ms. Grant has consented to a request by the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York to stay her case against Mr. McMahon, WWE, and Mr. Laurinaitis pursuant to a pending non-public investigation. We will cooperate with all appropriate next steps. And the stay is for 6 months, according to a person familiar with the case who asked not to be identified because the terms were not made public. Now, just because it's a 6-month stay does not mean that it cannot be extended beyond that, or that we might not hear about something happening before then, but for the time being, it's a 6-month stay. It was back in February that the Wall Street Journal and ABC News reported that the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York launched a criminal investigation into allegations of sexual misconduct and sex trafficking against Vince McMahon. There were four sealed documents submitted to the court this week. It sounds to me, I mean, you hear about all this stuff here, and it sounds a lot to me like his problems are about to go from purely civil to criminal. And there could be another government indictment on the way very soon. It would not be his first. But the Janelle Grant stuff may be only the tip of the iceberg to this story. You know, Vince and P. Diddy, they're in a lot of hot water right now. Now, could she have refused the request to stay her case and continue on? Sure. It was her choice. But if the feds are trying to build a sex trafficking case against this man and they have other evidence, that could only help her case. You know, I would imagine anything revealed in a criminal case against him could be used in her civil case. So why would she say no to that? It can only help her. It doesn't hurt her. You know, WWE and Laurinaitis, they recently joined with McMahon in requesting that the lawsuit be sent to arbitration. So that decision is now on hold as well for at least 6 months. You know, right now, we don't know what we don't know. We don't know what the feds have on Vince. We know they raided his home last year. They seized his phone, at least his phone. I don't know what else they may have been looking for. It's not a guarantee that an indictment is coming, but it sounds very likely. And I'll tell you what, you know, the Southern District of New York, they don't mess around. You know, they have a 95% conviction rate. That means 95% of all criminal cases result in a guilty plea. Federal cases in general are very rare. I mean, in 2018 alone, only 2% of criminal defendants went to trial, and most who did were found guilty. So if, and it's a big if they bring charges, he's in a world of trouble. You know, I don't know what the rate was when Vince was put on trial in 94. He got off on that one, but this sounds potentially much bigger than that. And with electronic evidence now that didn't exist back then, who knows what kind of stuff they may be sitting on. So stay tuned. And it isn't just Vince McMahon who should be worried right now. WWE has a lot of exposure here, too. So I'm sure I'm going to have a lot more to report on this story in the weeks and months ahead. There is a ton of WWE contract news to dive into here. This is probably more contract news at any one time than I have ever reported in one show in all the years I've been doing this podcast. So we're talking contracts that have either expired already or are on the verge of expiring. And this is something you never would have heard about years ago under the previous ownership. But locking people down early doesn't seem to be much of a priority for them these days. We'll start with Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch is easily the biggest name of the bunch. After losing her Women's World Championship in Saudi Arabia last weekend, she invoked her rematch clause for a steel cage match with Liv Morgan on Raw last Monday. And she lost again. After Braun Strowman, the Strowman Express, shoulder blocked Dominic Mysterio, who inadvertently slammed into the cage door, which was open, and then slammed into Becky's head. So Liv Morgan picks up the win. Then Liv Morgan, as she was leaving, planted a kiss on Dominic and just saying that she planted a kiss on him doesn't even begin to describe what this looked like. It looked like she was trying to swallow his entire head, which we only saw because they put it on social media. If you were watching this in this country on USA Network, so I think in other countries, you saw the entire thing. But here on USA, and there was stuff about how it did air in parts of the country, on YouTube TV and stuff. I can vouch and say, no, it did not. But you missed it because they cut the feed right before she kissed him. But as of yesterday, at midnight, Becky Lynch, one of the first women to main event a WrestleMania, and at one point, arguably, the biggest star in the entire company. There was a stretch of at least a few months where she was, I would argue, the biggest name, male or female, in all of WWE. At the end of 2018, going into 2019, I mean, she was on fire. Even now, she's still one of their biggest names. She's not at that peak of popularity that she had 5 or 6 years ago, but she's still one of their biggest names. She is officially a free agent. And there is no non-compete because her contract expired. She was not released, which means that she is free and clear now to go where she wants and do what she wants. If she wanted to go to Tony Khan and say, hey, I want to work a match with Mercedes at Wembley Stadium for the TBS title. She could do that, and I'm sure Tony would trip over himself to make the deal happen, even as just a one-off. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. But she could do that if she wanted to. WWE doesn't seem to believe that she's interested in going anywhere else. The belief is that she's looking to take an extended break from wrestling altogether. Like a long hiatus. It's not a retirement. It's more of a long vacation. She's got a young daughter. WWE, it's a tough schedule for a lot of people, let alone if you have kids. It could just be that she wants to spend more time at home with her child. Maybe she wants to have more kids. Who knows? She's made enough money where she's earned the right to do whatever she wants to do, and she can do so without having to worry about, you know, how am I going to pay the bills? You know, she doesn't have to worry about that. That's not to mention her husband recently re-signed with the company, and I'm sure he's getting paid very nicely. Now, Meltzer was speculating that she may have been looking to leave after her WrestleMania match with Rhea Ripley, and that sounds about right to me. I mean, she worked that match sick. She put Rhea over. Had Rhea not gotten hurt, they needed a plan. I mean, look, Rhea got hurt. They needed a plan B. Becky was the one. She was the one other big name they had in that Raw women's division. So they put the belt on her, and they used her to help put Liv Morgan over to set up for the eventual program with Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan. That makes sense to me. Now, it's a blow to the women's division on Raw because now they have Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch out. You know, Liv Morgan is not a big enough name to carry the division on her own. And after her, you know, you've got Lyra Valkyria and you've got Damage Control. And that's it. I mean, they have plenty of other women in the division. It's not that they don't have the bodies, but nobody else is at a level right now where they would be feuding with Liv for the title. So that's a blow to Raw, but now there's a chance to try to make some new stars, you know, and they've been trying with Lyra. She's still new. But she's been getting over slowly but surely. It's a chance for them to try to elevate somebody else. I have no doubt that when Becky Lynch is ready to return, it will be with WWE. I do not see her signing with AEW. I know a lot of people think it's possible. Sure, it's possible. It's possible to the extent that she's a free agent, so anything is possible. I'm a free agent. I could show up on Dynamite this week. That ain't gonna happen. Is it likely? No, I don't think it's likely. She and WWE are going to come to terms on a fat new contract when she's good and ready, and she will be back to pick up where she left off. I would be surprised if it went any other way. That doesn't mean there won't be reports saying otherwise or suggesting that she's sending feelers through people to Tony Khan and other promotions. That would be smart business. That's what I would do. Try to get as much money out of WWE as you can. If there's one thing they have plenty of right now, it's money. Why not make them spread that wealth around a little bit? You know, Randy Orton, he openly admitted that he leveraged AEW to get himself a better deal with WWE when his contract was about to expire. I mean, what's the point of having competition if you're not going to use it? That's one of the great things about having AEW around if you're a WWE star. I'm sure there are people in WWE who would never go to AEW. They might even laugh at that. They would laugh at the idea, but they would be happy to use them for leverage to get a better deal. But I don't see her going anywhere else. Natalya is another one whose contract is almost up. WWE is said to have offered her a new deal, but she has yet to sign it. Natty has been a lifer in WWE. She's been there going on 17 years. I mean, as long as I've been doing this podcast, I'm going to be doing this show 17 years as of November. As long as I've been doing this show, this woman has been working for WWE. She's been the Divas champion. She's been a women's champion. You know, and I will say, though, all things considered, when you consider how long she's been there, I'm actually surprised she hasn't won more titles. There's so many people who have held multiple titles, you know, 5, 6, 8 times. And I'm not just talking about Charlotte Flair. She's been Divas champion, I think, once. Women's champion once. And a women's tag team champion in those nearly 17 years. But she's wrestled everybody there is to work with. She's been spending time recently in NXT. She challenged Roxanne Perez last month for the NXT Women's Championship. She had an NXT Underground match with Lola Vice several weeks ago. She also had a really good match with Io Sky in the Queen of the Ring tournament. But she is similar to Dolph Ziggler in this way. She has been there forever. And they take her for granted in that they know they can plug her in wherever they need her. They can use her to put over other people. But she herself will never be the focal point of anything. I mean, she's just been around for too long. And they're focused on trying to get new names over. She is not a new name. You know, she's well-liked. She's well-respected. I know she and her husband, TJ Wilson, they help train some of the women at their gym. I don't think it's a school so much as it might be a gym, but that's where I think she can bring the most value, honestly, at this point to WWE as a trainer and as somebody who works, you know, for these women and with them behind the scenes and in the ring too, but especially off camera. I think that's where she brings real value. I don't know if she would be interested in becoming an agent or joining the Performance Center and spending more time with all the women they have down in NXT, but I think that's where her future is if she stays. And I don't know if that's what she wants to be doing right now. You know, she may want to wrestle another 5 or 10 years and win world titles. You know, who knows? But she is never going to be the focal point of anything on WWE television. So it boils down to what she wants out of her future in wrestling. It's hard for me to imagine her walking away from WWE, but I would say it's more likely to me than Becky Lynch leaving. If I had to rank the likelihood of these names jumping, I would be less surprised if Natty were to leave than I would Becky Lynch. Then we have Ricochet, who is the current Speed champion for their new show on X. For those of you who watch the Speed show, Elon wants it to be X exclusive, which is why we don't see him with the belt on TV. I guess that's part of their deal. It's exclusive to the platform. Ricochet's contract, we learn from Fightful and Viper Reports, is also coming up very soon. His deal is set to expire this summer, and the two sides are expected to speak on a new deal very soon, but I guess it hasn't happened yet. You know, right now he's involved in a program with Bron Breakker and Ilya Dragunov on Raw, which I assume is going to result in a triple threat match at Clash at the Castle. I hope so. I am totally down for that match. And I think if they do it, I think we just found out who's eating the pin in that match if it happens. Ricochet is an interesting case. He is incredibly gifted as far as the athletic things that he can do in the ring. He's like Will Ospreay in that he's like a video game character come to life. The things that I have seen him do, especially, you know, years ago, like even before he came to WWE, he shouldn't be able to do. You know, he's that kind of performer. When he came to WWE, it was a big deal. And he had a good run in NXT. And then he came to the main roster, and Vince McMahon never pushed him as a headliner because he didn't see him as a headliner. He did have a short run with the U.S. title, short as in I think it lasted about 3 weeks. He held the Intercontinental title for a little bit longer before he dropped it to Gunther, and we all know what he went on to do with it. He was featured. He was a featured performer for the most part on TV, but not in the way that a lot of people would have liked to have seen him be featured. I think his size definitely hurt him. I think that worked against him. Less so now, more so when he first got called up. Under Paul Levesque, I would say he's been featured more consistently on television. I think that's a fair statement. He's been getting a small push on Raw, but now that we get these reports that his contract is coming up soon, is that just because his contract is coming up and they're trying to make him happy? I think the biggest problem with Ricochet in WWE, once he got called up, is that he's not a strong promo. It's just not where he shines. And I know there are some people who don't want to see him in WWE and they don't think that's important, right? Because I heard that from a couple of people also on social media. I had one person attack me because I dared comment on his promo ability. And apparently that made me not a wrestling fan. Yes, this is the kind of nonsensical drivel that I am subjected to on social media. Evidently that makes me not a wrestling fan. That I dare talk about his promo ability, which clearly affects his standing in the company that he currently works for. It's just not where he shines. And in a company where your verbal skills are prioritized as much as anything, I would even say maybe even more than what you can do in the ring. That hurt him. that backstage segment with him and Ilya Dragunov on Raw Monday in the trainer's room, where Dragunov told him, look, I break people, but I don't wrestle broken people. And then Ricochet shot back with, Ricochet ain't nothing but money, and I ain't never been broke. Like, the way he delivered it was such a great fucking line. And I sat here like, where's that guy been? Like, maybe if he had more dialogue like that on TV, he would have been higher up on the card. But it's been a weakness for him, and I really think that hurt him during his time there. Will Ospreay has been on social media practically begging this man to leave and come to AEW. He's dying to work with Ricochet again. The last time they wrestled was 2017. The athleticism between them is off the charts. I think Ricochet would fit in perfectly with that style in AEW. But here's the thing. Here's how I look at it. There are a lot of guys like that in AEW. Will Ospreay being one of them. Rey Fénix, I put him on the list. Vikingo, when they bring him in, you know, he's hurt right now. Those three off the top of my head. There's nobody like that right now in WWE. Nobody can do the things that Ricochet does. And he's holding back. Like, the things that we see him doing on TV now, that's like Ricochet at 75%. All right, he ain't no Prince Puma in WWE. In WWE, he's one of a kind. In AEW, he would be one of many. You know, but in WWE, I also think that he has pretty much hit his ceiling. You know, where he is now is about as high as he's going to get. I don't see him being WWE champion. I don't see him being world heavyweight champion. In AEW, honestly, I don't know that he would be much higher than where he is now. I don't see him being AEW champion either. How important is that to him? You know, we talk about it as fans, as content creators, we talk about oftentimes being a world champion, right? This guy, oh, he's getting a little bit of a push, but he's never going to be a world champion. To some of these guys, that may not matter as much. I'm sure everybody would love to be the world champion one day. But if Ricochet is on television, if he's being used, if he's relatively happy with what they have him doing, if he's held other titles and he's doing all kinds of things, if he's doing outside projects maybe with WWE, like, we don't know what his priority is. He may not give a shit. He may be like, you know what? Okay, maybe I won't be the world champion, or maybe I will, but I'm pretty content with where I'm at. We just don't know. We can't get in their heads. Just because we're talking about what we think matters doesn't mean that it matters equally to them. I put the chances of him leaving higher than Becky Lynch or Natalya, but I still don't think he leaves. But if he does, he would kill it on the independent scene. I mean, he can go to AEW and still take indie bookings, and he would just absolutely smash it. If he does, so again, he wouldn't be hurting for money or work. If he does leave, we might finally get to see the debut of Rick O'Shea, if WWE gets to keep the rights to the Ricochet name. Rick O'Shea may become a real thing very soon. But again, it's still hard to see him leaving. Better chance of it, but I don't think he goes. But this next one shocks me, considering how much he's been featured on TV of late, even more than Ricochet. But again, you ask yourself the question, is this the reason why he's getting such a push lately? Chad Gable might soon become a free agent. As first reported by Fightful Select, Chad Gable's WWE contract is set to expire late next week. That's this week coming up. With no new deal reached as of now, if Gable enters free agency, he is expected to attract significant interest from various wrestling promotions. I could think of one that we'd love to get him. WWE has expressed interest in re-signing him, with his contract expiring next Friday based on available information. Sources indicate that there will be a strong push from talent in other companies to vouch for the 38-year-old should he become available. In addition to wrestling promotions, several MMA companies have expressed interest in booking Gable if he becomes a free agent. You know, I didn't even realize he was 38. I thought he was mid-30s. I didn't realize he was older than that. Gable is in the middle of the biggest push of his life. He is almost certainly going to end up with the Intercontinental title, I guess pending his contract status. We'll see. But what a terrible story if he doesn't eventually win this title. He should end up with the title. He should end up, hopefully, with the Creed brothers when they go heel and we get a trio out of it. My guess is he stays. But boy, you know, if he becomes a free agent, he is going to get some offers. And I hope he ends up with the best deal that he can get himself and just wherever his heart takes him. He suffered a lot of wasted time working for this company. He is 38 years old now, but he was 33 when Vince McMahon hit him with that Shorty G garbage. Okay, American Alpha was awesome. And it's a damn shame that Jason Jordan's career ended the way it did. But even before Jason Jordan got hurt, they had already split them up. There was no American Alpha anymore. They went with Jordan as Kurt Angle's son, his, I guess, illegitimate son. Was he illegitimate? I don't know. But anyway, he was Kurt Angle's son. When it was clear as day that they should have gone with Chad Gable in that spot, right? They still could have pushed Jason Jordan doing something else. But, I mean, that was a gimme for Chad Gable. But Vince McMahon didn't care about Chad Gable. He cared about Jason Jordan. He looked at Jason Jordan, he saw dollar signs. And he probably wasn't wrong about that. That's why also it's a shame that he didn't get a proper run before he got hurt. I don't want to sit here and tell you that Chad Gable is the next Kurt Angle, because there's only one Kurt Angle, right? And there's the good and the bad that go with that, because the guy's a maniac. But there's only one Kurt Angle. But Gable and Angle have a lot of similarities, and they could have made money with that. Instead, it was wasted time that he can't get back, right? But that was also under someone else's creative vision. That person isn't there anymore. And like I said, Gable is in the middle of the best story right now. Outside of Punk and McIntyre, the best story going on Monday Night Raw is the Gable Alpha Academy stuff, the Sami Zayn. I thought that segment last Monday with the Academy and Sami was fantastic. And I would hate to see that story derailed if he was to leave. But if he left for a better offer, I mean, how could you blame the guy? The way they bungled him for so long? Just because they're doing well by him now doesn't make up for all that lost time and all the bullshit that he had to go through. I think he stays, though. Spot that he's in right now, I think he ends up staying. So really, I think they all stay. But Becky is the only one I would sit here and tell you for sure is not going to go to AEW. I just don't see it. On SmackDown Friday night, the show-long story throughout the episode was AJ Styles teasing the possibility that he was about to retire in the middle of the ring. And as soon as you saw him in the back, in his pastel-colored suit, it might not have been a salmon suit, but he had that that baby blue, he had that powder blue suit, you had to know what was coming. Everybody but Cody Rhodes had to know what was coming. And sure enough, he came out there and he was getting very emotional and talking about wanting to spend more time at home with his family. And Nick Aldis would not grant him another shot at the WWE title. He would have to go to the back of the line. And he just has been doing this for far too long to go to the back of the line. He called out Cody Rhodes, and Cody was getting all emotional and, you know, putting him over and raised his arm to each side of the ring until finally AJ just blasted him with a clothesline. As the Good Brothers watched on laughing from the outside, it was all a setup. They were all in on it. And he put a beatdown on Cody Rhodes, ended up giving him a Styles Clash from the top of the ring steps to the floor. It's a vicious attack. And so now we know the answer to who Cody Rhodes' next challenger is going to be. Clearly, it's not official yet, but clearly it will be a WWE Championship rematch between the two of them at Clash at the Castle. It will not be headlining the show because Drew McIntyre, I'm sure, is going to be headlining that show. But Cody has a challenger now, not only for Clash at the Castle, but if I were booking this, this would be a situation where you get two more matches out of it. Because why not? As great as that first match was in France, and now with the angle they shot on Friday, they put some real heat on this. Kind of made Cody look like an idiot, but they put some real gas on the fire here. Especially it not being in the main event. You don't have to do a clean, decisive finish in Scotland. You could do a finish that is some sort of disputed finish, some kind of no contest or even a disqualification, something that would necessitate one last match at Money in the Bank between them. And that would bridge the gap from now until SummerSlam. Whatever they're going to do with Cody at SummerSlam, it's not going to be AJ. I don't think they'd get four matches out of it. But if Rock is not going to come back, I'm still, my money's on Randy Orton. You know, whenever they do that Randy Orton and Gunther rematch, I would have a stipulation where, okay, Gunther may have won King of the Ring and the referee's decision is final, but if Randy can beat him in the rematch, then Randy also deserves a shot at his brand's world title. And that's how you get to Cody and Randy at SummerSlam. That's how I would book that. But now they got their bases covered here. You can get a match with AJ out of it twice. And you're not going to get a complaint out of me, you know, as great as that first match was. So as predictable as the angle was, I still thought it was well done. It got the seal of approval from Mark Henry online. And so if it's got his seal of approval, and that's really all you need, I guess, if you're going to do that angle. We also had a tease, LA Knight making it very clear that he wants to go after Logan Paul and the United States Championship. Logan Paul was not on the show on Friday, but they are already building to it. And so I wonder if they're not going to wait until SummerSlam, and we may get more than one match between them. So whether it's Clash at the Castle or whether it's Money in the Bank, you can do the first match between Logan Paul and LA Knight, and Logan can do what he do. Let him do what he do to hold on to his title. We get a rematch at SummerSlam in Cleveland, and that's where LA Knight finally wins gold. Because he's got to win a title at some point. You're not going to put the WWE title on him right now, but he should have a title. He is still over enough that he should be winning, that he should be next in line for that United States title. I still don't see that happening until SummerSlam. That doesn't mean they can't have a match before then, though. So that would make sense to me to do it maybe at Money in the Bank. But those are the key developments from TV this week. Otherwise, there wasn't really a whole lot going on storyline-wise that's really worth getting into here that I haven't already covered on the live reviews. But I tell you what I am going to cover here, and this will be the first time in a while. I know I have not been reviewing NXT for a little bit now, for a hot minute. I just kind of fell out of it. Just not as interesting to me. I still try to keep up with what's going on generally. And then this week I see that NXT made headlines when NXT general manager Ava announced who Roxanne Perez would be defending her NXT Women's Championship against next Sunday at their Battleground show from the UFC Apex in Las Vegas. It will be the TNA Knockouts champion, Jordynne Grace, who walked out to confront Roxanne at the PC on Tuesday night in the middle of the ring. Now, we saw Jordynne Grace in this year's Royal Rumble, and she looked great. I thought she outshined most of the WWE talent in the match, to be honest with you. It appears the working relationship between WWE and TNA is going to continue, and I think that's awesome. I love it. Okay, whatever you think of TNA, and even from the beginning of the year, in terms of like buzz and attention, I mean, boy, have they fallen off in terms of all that love and attention they were getting ever since Scott D'Amore got shit-canned. But whatever you think about the company, I mean, look, they've got a talented roster. Jordynne Grace being one of the champions on that roster right now. I think it's awesome. I think we need more of this in wrestling. AEW should not be the only major company willing to work with other promotions. We found out this week, you know, for example, Mercedes Moné, the TBS champion, is going to be wrestling Stephanie Vaquer, the CMLL Women's World Champion at Forbidden Door. Well, before we get to Forbidden Door, we've got the NXT Women's Champion defending against the TNA Knockouts Champion. Like, how cool is that? So, how did this all come to pass? Per PW Insider, the deal came together about 3 weeks ago and was kept so confidential that 99% of the staff in TNA had no idea that it was happening, including the creative team. This week's TNA TV, they had to be adjusted late in the editing process to include a recap of her appearance on NXT. During the NXT rehearsals, the run sheet for the segment listed Alexa Bliss as the one coming out, and they played Lita's entrance music during the rehearsal to throw everybody off. So they were working hard to make sure that this shit didn't leak, which I can appreciate because it's rare these days that stuff doesn't leak. So when they can pull it off, it's actually kind of a hat tip moment. It's not easy to keep this stuff under wraps. There are some in WWE that have claimed Roxanne legitimately did not know who would be walking out until she actually appeared live on TV. Did Jordynne Grace? I don't know if I believe that, but that's what's being claimed. According to Mike Johnson, the belief in WWE is that there will be some sort of NXT involvement at the TNA Against All Odds show on June 14th, which will see Grace having an open challenge for her TNA Knockouts title. And there may also be some NXT involvement at Slammiversary in Montreal this year. The hope within TNA is that the NXT connection can help lift ticket sales for their upcoming events, even if they can't actually announce any NXT talent in advance, which they may not be able to, or they may want it to be a surprise. He also says that Grace is under TNA contract through the first quarter of 2025, at which point, if she wanted to leave, she would be free and clear to. I find it hard to believe she won't end up in WWE next year. I would be shocked if she didn't sign there. That would be shocking to me. WWE is clearly high on her. Shawn Michaels did an interview this week where he said he's been very public about being a fan of her work, and he expressed to Triple H privately how jealous he was that the main roster got to use her in the Royal Rumble this year. You know, wrestling is more fun when we get these types of collaborations. I take it for granted at this point with AEW, but anytime I see WWE doing this, even NXT, it's wild to me because for so many years they've been so walled off from everybody else in their own little world and walled off from allowing other people to play in their sandbox or allowing their talent to play in somebody else's sandbox. You can find examples of it here and there, like isolated examples, but it was very rare. So I think it's great. It was not a great week for TNA behind the scenes. Per PW Insider, there were a number of departures this week as part of cutbacks made by Anthem Management. David Sahadi, who is their creative director, and you may know the name. He used to work for WWE for many years. He was a wizard when it came to their video packages. I remember him telling the story about the legend spot that he produced. This was back at like the beginning of the Attitude Era. It had Fred Blassie and Gorilla Monsoon and Ernie Ladd and just some of these legends, basically like in an empty warehouse they filmed it, talking about how, and they had voiceovers from each one talking about how, oh, we could still hear the cheers of the crowd, and then you see the fans in the background, like they had people in the building as they're in the ring waving. It's as if they're imagining it, but then you see there's nobody there. And the punchline was basically, they cheered for us, now we cheer for them. And they showed Austin and Mankind and The Undertaker. Like, it was powerful stuff. And I remember him saying that when he showed it to Vince McMahon, Vince had to leave the room because it made him so emotional. Like, he's very good at what he does. But he's gone from the promotion. He was the director for TNA broadcast for many years under previous ownerships. And like I said, for WWE before that. R.D. Evans, who was considered their head of creative, is also gone. The word making the rounds is that relations between he and the company had grown strained, and he was increasingly frustrated. It was said to be his decision to leave. And there were multiple departures from their live events division, but no talents were let go. There are people now trying to spin the timing as, oh, you know, WWE may be about to buy TNA. But there's absolutely no indication of that happening. That's just people letting their imagination run wild. So if you see stuff like that, just consider the source. There's nothing to indicate that that's going to happen. I'll tell you what, you know, they're doing this match, champion against champion, right? Roxanne against Jordynne Grace. Only Roxanne's title is on the line, at least for now. Only Roxy's title is on the line. I would have Jordynne Grace beat Roxanne Perez and win the NXT women's title. Why not? Make a splash. Shock the world. And then, at Against All Odds, which is, what is it, 2 weeks away? Grace has an open challenge, right? Roxanne accepts as a surprise and wins the belt back. She gets her to put the NXT women's title on the line and can win the belt back. Now, the only thing is, it's an open challenge, I believe, for the TNA Knockouts title. So do they go back and forth and have Roxanne win the Knockouts title? I don't know. So maybe it doesn't happen on that show, but she can get her belt back in a week or two. Like, it's a quick change, but it gets people talking. Now, it's completely antithetical to how WWE operates to allow somebody else's champion to beat their champion on their show, but that's exactly why I would do it. She wins it back. No harm, no foul. Now, the only reason I think they might think twice about it is if their plan is to debut Julia next month. Julia is the wild card here. And all these reports about her debut in NXT indicate that the plan is for her to beat Roxanne. on their Heatwave show in July. That's if Julia is ready by then. She just had surgery for a fractured wrist. She's walking around with a giant cast on her arm. But the plan supposedly is to have her beat Roxanne in her first night in to win the title. So they might not want to beat Roxanne. They might want to save that win for Julia. But fuck it. Like, I'd have Grace win. Realistically, Jordynne Grace should smash this woman into the ground anyway. I mean, just look at the two of them. It's not that hard to conceive of Roxanne losing to Jordynne Grace. But as long as she gets her win back, I don't see the harm in it. And I think it would get a lot of people talking in a good way. Now, the other headline coming out of NXT this week was the surprise debut of All Ego, Ethan Page. There had been a series of random attacks on talent behind the scenes. He was revealed to be the one behind it and attacked the NXT champion Trick Williams at the end of the show, held up the NXT title, teasing a match between the two. Despite what he said on his social media, I saw the video that he posted. Ethan Page was talking about how, you know, contrary to popular belief, I haven't signed anywhere. He has signed with WWE. Of course he has signed with WWE. They do not shoot an angle like that with him laying out their champion unless he was under contract. Plus, he's already pulled out of some indie appearances that he was scheduled for later in the year. So they signed him. He left AEW and Ring of Honor. I guess you have to say Ring of Honor because that's where he was spending much of his time lately. But he left there at the beginning of May. And they very quietly removed his profile from their website. It was never said why he left, and I don't think he's spoken about it, not yet. One can surmise from the way that he was being used, or not being used, that he probably wasn't very happy there with how he was being utilized. And I'm sure he is not the only one. He is one of many, I'm sure, who feel that way. He was another victim of the start and stop push in AEW, where it would look like they were doing something with him, whether it was the Men of the Year stuff or whatever they had him doing, right? He would get this sort of small push doing something for a while. It wouldn't last long, though, and then he would vanish. I think I even made the comment when he left AEW that NXT would be a great place for him, not even the main roster yet. Start him in NXT, you know, kind of like a big fish in a small pond. Let him get a run there, and if all goes well, then he could always be called up. Because he's good, he is. He's a very good promo. He can definitely talk, which is going to help him a lot there. I think this is a great pickup for NXT. This is what NXT should be doing right now, coming up with surprises like this to get people talking. They've continued to utilize talent from the main roster, whether it's Natalya or Shayna Baszler or the Good Brothers, Ivar before he got hurt, Meechan. Talent that has not been doing much on the main roster, using them in a way to help get over the talent they have down there. Meechan, for example, she's one of six women in a ladder match at Battleground next weekend to crown the first ever NXT Women's North American Champion. And I like Fallon Henley in that match, by the way. And they've got Shayna Baszler taking on Lola Vice in an NXT Underground match, which I assume Vice is winning. Yeah, I know she already beat Natty in one of these matches before. I'm also curious about that Battleground show. I'm curious, because I'm going to watch that show. I'm curious what the UFC Apex looks like for a wrestling show. I know it's a really small venue. I don't know if it's smaller than the PC, like if the setup there will be able to accommodate more people. I think at the PC they have about 300 people, if that. I don't know if the Apex can fit more than that for a wrestling show. You know, if it's bigger, it's not much bigger. And it's weird to me. I'm not even sure why they're doing it. They've been able to put a few thousand people on the road in actual arenas, so I don't know why they're running there unless they got a great deal to do so. But sometimes, you know, these shows in a really intimate setting like this could turn out to be a lot of fun. So as a first time, I guess it's probably worth trying. I'm still waiting for one of these companies to run the Hammerstein Ballroom. I'm shocked that Tony Khan hasn't run there already for an AEW show. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. There's lots of things in life that aren't fair. You know, when someone steals your parking spot, that's not fair. When you buy something online that you think is going to fit you, but it's one size too small, and then you find out that all sales are final. Yes, this has happened to me once. That's not fair. You know what else isn't fair? The fact that Netflix hides thousands of shows and movies from you based on where you live, and then has the nerve to keep raising rates on you. Sure, you could just cancel your membership in protest, or you could be smart about it and get all your money's worth by using ExpressVPN like I do. Did you know that what's on Netflix in your country is completely different from what somebody in the UK or South Korea has on theirs? Using ExpressVPN, I can control which country I want Netflix to think I'm in. ExpressVPN has over 100 countries to choose from, so every time I run out of stuff to watch, I just switch to another country to unlock new shows. I've been watching reruns of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. It's not on US Netflix, but with one tap of a button, ExpressVPN transports me to India. And we're in business. Even better, it's not just for Netflix. You can use ExpressVPN to unlock shows on other streaming services too, like BBC iPlayer. I decided to give it a try. I was just checking it out. I checked out a comedy series on there called Bad Education. There's a bunch of other shows on there too. What I love about ExpressVPN is that it's super fast. I never experience any lag or buffering. It's also compatible with all my devices, including my phone and my laptop. So it's very convenient to use. I like convenience. So be smart. Stop paying full price for streaming services and only getting access to a fraction of their content. Get your money's worth at expressvpn.com/solomonster. Don't forget to use my link so you can get 3 extra months free. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. expressvpn.com/solomonster to learn more. Now, I also want to give a shout out here to Chris from Pennsylvania. He has been a longtime listener for about 8 years now. And the timing of this email that he sent me was perfect, because I knew I was doing another read here, and he wanted to tell me thanks for the promo code for ExpressVPN. He finally cut the cord on cable. He was worried about how he was going to watch his local Phillies games. Now, I can answer that by saying the best solution would be not to watch Phillies games, but I'm going to resist the temptation. I'm not going to do that. But he said it worked just as easily as I said that it would, with the MLB TV app not knowing that he's local, so they couldn't black out the game. So again, that's one example of how useful this can be. So when I tell you these things, I'm not just reading it to you. Like, you got to try it out for yourself. And I'm telling you, in a lot of cases, it's going to save you a lot of trouble. It's going to save you a lot of headaches. And so why not get 3 extra months free by just using the link that I have here? So again, take advantage of this. And I love hearing stories like that. So feel free to email me. Now let's talk AEW, because we have a lot to get into here. There was a story this week on the website Puck from media reporter Matt Baloney, who is considered a Hollywood insider, is very plugged into the media landscape. Mark Shapiro, the president of Endeavor, has said in the past that his weekly newsletters are like his religion. Baloney reported that AEW's exclusive window for negotiations with Warner Brothers Discovery ends next month. He said, "I'm told the exclusive window closes in July, and AEW leader Tony Khan is said to be disappointed with the offer currently on the table. Khan also surely knows that David Zaslav losing the NBA would give AEW more leverage, even though the money to re-up AEW is a mere drop in the NBA bucket. If the window closes without a deal, others could swoop in for those rights, as Comcast has done with the NBA. Extra awkward because Warner Brothers Discovery is said to own a stake in the league. I'm not sure how alluring AEW would be to other platforms, especially since only non-WWE partners could bid, but the wrestling shows still do okay on the Turner networks. It's reliable programming, and a rival suitor could further push Zaslav into hot water in his cable carriage deals. For now, though, both sides are playing nice." Dave Meltzer had a follow-up report with AEW sources denying this to him and saying that the first offer was not disappointing to Tony Khan, but that the two sides have yet to reach any deal. Streaming rights are said to be part of those discussions, as they should be. You know, Tony has been open about wanting to do streaming for a long time now, and I don't know why he wouldn't want that to be a component to any deal that he makes. Maybe that's part of the holdup. Meltzer says the figures being discussed are said to be considerably more than the $110 million per year that would, in theory, take the company from not being profitable to being profitable. Their current deal, which I don't know that this has ever been confirmed, but for years, the belief is that the current deal, it was for 4 years, set to be for $175 million total. which would work out to be a little under $45 million a year. Now, for context, WWE is said to be getting $50 million for every Saudi show that they do. So for two shows, they get $100 million a year, which just shows you how insane that deal is and why they took it in the first place, despite all the pushback to making that deal when they did. What I've been saying is that they would get an increase. AEW would get an increase. Maybe even double or triple their existing deal. I would say for 3 to 5 years. But nothing astronomical. You know, just because Warner Brothers Discovery might be losing the NBA. And it sounds like the NBA is as good as gone on their networks after next year. You know, so there's some people who think, oh, if they lose the NBA, that opens up millions and millions of dollars that they can now allocate to keep AEW. That's not how it works. That's not how it works. AEW is not worth what the NBA is worth. AEW is not going to simply get the money that the NBA would normally get, or even half the money that the NBA would normally get. But they don't need NBA money. They don't need it to be profitable and have millions of dollars in the bank to spend on free agents. I think if they can get a decent increase, they're going to be in good shape. And I don't think that's unrealistic. I think that's actually very likely. Now, is Tony Khan disappointed by their initial offer? Well, I mean, he hasn't accepted it yet. Maybe he is. Or maybe, I know this is a wild concept here, maybe, just maybe, he's negotiating. They are in the negotiating window. Right? He still has another couple of months to negotiate and make a counteroffer if he wants. That's what the exclusive negotiation window is for. This is normal, standard stuff. I would not read too much into any of this or the Puck report or anything else. I think they stay. As I said at the beginning of the year, I think they stay with Warner Brothers Discovery. AEW is live programming that still does well for them, despite their recent ratings decreases. Okay, and Dynamite was back up this week. They were up almost to 800,000 viewers again without the NBA competition. Now, how much of that also had to do with MJF's return to Double or Nothing? And people thinking that he would be on the show on Wednesday, which he was not. I don't know. But you can't discount that as part of the reason why they shot up so much. They shot up over 100,000 viewers from what they did the week before. And I'm sure the lack of NBA competition was part of it, but it could also be the MJF effect. Compared to the same week last year, though, their numbers are still down. Almost 15% from where they were. Right? But the numbers they do are not terrible. And they have enough hours of content that I don't think Warner Brothers Discovery wants to lose them. It would not be a death blow if they did, right? Losing the NBA, which is much worse for them, may not be a death blow, but I think they like having AEW programming to plug into their schedule on both networks. It's not just TBS, it's TBS, it's TNT. That's 5 hours of content. And Tony Khan said this week that that's like the bare minimum of what he thinks AEW should be doing. He does not want to go below 5 hours. Right now, it's 2 hours of Dynamite, 2 hours of Collision, 1 hour of Rampage. He wants more. I mean, the way he was talking in that interview that I saw, I don't know if it was with Sports Illustrated or who it was with, but he sounded very open even to the possibility of doing three-hour shows. We've gotten some three-hour blocks from them in recent weeks with all the sports preemptions. Now, I don't like that idea, but I don't think he's against it. So he wants more programming, and that would be more hours of content, mostly live content, that they can plug into their schedule. And I think that's something that would be attractive, you know, to Warner Brothers Discovery. So I would expect something to be announced soon. That is going to be the biggest AEW story of the year, is how this deal plays out. They need this deal. The streaming discussions are not said to involve buying the pay-per-views and airing them on Max, which is disappointing if that's the case. I wish they would do it, but the most important thing is to lock down a deal for the next few years so they have that security and they have the money that comes with it, because they need that money to stay competitive in the way that they are right now and to be able to do the things that they do, to host these events and to buy the rights to some of the music that they buy the rights to. All the things that we have come to, you know, kind of be used to Tony Khan doing, he's not going to be able to do it if he doesn't have the money to spend on it. So this is a very important couple of months coming up here for this company. Now, last Sunday, Adam Copeland placed his bets. He went Double or Nothing, and he lost. He lost everything. on a jump from the top of the cage in his match with Malakai Black. He wrapped Malakai Black in barbed wire on top of a table, and he ascended, which was stupid to begin with. That was stupid thing number one that he did. And then he proceeded to ascend to the top of a very tall cage, at least 15 feet up in the air. It was a bad idea before he even jumped. Because think about it. You're standing at least 15 feet up in the air. You either dive off and you land, you splash this person who you have wrapped in barbed wire and you lacerate yourself, you fucking disembowel yourself on the way down when you land, or you do what he did, which is you panic at the last moment as he jumped. He changed his mind. As soon as he jumped, he landed feet first. He came straight down. I thought he blew out his knees. Turned out he broke his leg. Fractured his tibia, his shin bone. Shin bone to the dome when your mama ain't home. That still lives rent-free in my head. You can thank Bryan Danielson for that. But he finished the match. Now, it was not the finish, of course, because these things never are. You do a spot like that, and then the fucking guy kicks out, which is just ridiculous. So the match continued, and he finished the match. Somehow. Adrenaline would be my guess. And ended up retaining the TNT title. We even got a cameo from Gangrel, who got screwed out of an AEW appearance a few years ago after Edge brought back the old Brood entrance at SummerSlam that year. So it was nice to see him again. He finally got that long-awaited cameo that he's been waiting for. But the way Copeland was limping out of there last Sunday and had to be helped to the back, I was thinking he blew out his ACL, or maybe he ruptured his Achilles again, which he did many years ago. But he didn't do either of those things. He broke his leg. He posted a video on social media saying, "I've been feeling really good lately, been having so much fun in the ring, and I got cocky. I guess that's really what it comes down to. My brain forgets what my body always seems to remember. A little late is that I'm 50 and I need to make better choices. So my body pulled the emergency brake on me the other night and I ended up fracturing my tibia, which is going to require surgery. Don't know the time frame on that yet." Well, at least he understands that. He can't do the same things he did at 50 that he did when he was 30 or 40. But if we're being totally honest here, it would have been equally stupid for a 30 or 40-year-old to do what he did and to come down feet first like that. He would have broken his leg. I feel like whatever age he would have been, he would have broken his leg no matter what. I almost broke my leg just watching it. But when that adrenaline gets going, I mean, it makes you do funny things. Like he said, he got cocky. He got cocky, and that's what happens. Now, I wish him well. That's typically, from what I've read, a 4 to 6 month recovery window at his age. I don't know if it might take longer, right? It's the same thing with Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston is no spring chicken anymore. I mean, and look at the injuries that he sustained. I'm going to get to him in a second. Who knows? I mean, they're saying 10 months for him. It could be 10 months. It could be 18 months. Who the fuck knows? You know, it gets harder the older you get. Now, the internal reaction per PW Insider has been one of sadness and sympathy. Copeland has become a great mentor behind the scenes to a lot of people, is what the report says. And look, I think, and I said this on Tuesday, when I was doing TNT with JD, I said this on Tuesday. That is one of the reasons why he should not be doing stuff like that. All that does is make other people go, "Well, if he can do it, then I can do it. Or if he's doing it, then maybe it's not so crazy if I do it." See, I think people like Copeland can do a great service to these wrestlers by showing them they can get over by not doing things like that, by not feeling like I've got to do crazy stunts and I've got to jump high above from the top of the cage. You don't have to do that. You don't have to constantly be trying to top everybody else with one extreme stunt after another, or eventually this is what happens. Unfortunately, what he did do last Sunday was set an example for what not to do. But I think because of that, because he probably does have people behind the scenes who look up to him and respect his legacy and his advice and his opinions on things, and they see him go out and do the same dumb shit that some of these other guys do, and they think that in some way it validates it, that it's okay. It's not. And he should know better. And it sounds like he understands that. And again, I feel bad that he got hurt, but From the moment he wrapped that guy in barbed wire and started climbing, I said, this is not going to end well. No matter what he does, there's no way that this is going to end well for this guy. And what I think is sad also is that he won't be able to wrestle at Wembley Stadium this year, which would have been cool for him. I'm sure to be able to wrestle in front of 50 or 60,000 people for a company other than WWE, right? I mean, he's been in front of many stadium crowds before, but never for another promotion. If he's there, he might be there. You know, he might fly out to Wembley, but it'll have to be in a non-wrestling role if he does. And before I get to the TNT title, from one broken leg to another, Copeland is not the only AEW star to break his tibia recently. Eddie Kingston broke his during that match with Gabe Kidd at the New Japan show in California several weeks ago. He also tore his ACL and his meniscus, and the update last week was that he would be holding off on getting knee surgery until his leg is able to heal and he does some physical therapy. Well, he now has a date set for surgery, and this is for the knee. So this is for the ACL and the meniscus. He will be having surgery on July 8th. And once he has the surgery for his knee injuries, he's expected to be out for a minimum of 10 months, which would put his return at May of 2025 at the earliest. Now back to the TNT title. My suggestion with what to do with this championship was to hold qualifying matches on TV and then build to a four-way match and crown a new champion that way. That is if the Elite did not just go and hand the title over to Jack Perry on Wednesday. So that's what I said coming into it. I wasn't too far off. They teased handing the title over to Jack Perry until Christopher Daniels walked out. The same Christopher Daniels who was fired by the Elite a few weeks ago. He said that Tony Khan made him a temporary EVP, because we don't have enough of those. And when he makes announcements, we should know that it's coming straight from Tony Khan himself. And I like that, because it means we don't have to see Tony Khan on television shouting announcements awkwardly into the microphone like a dying animal. Except, I was watching Collision last night, and what do I see? I see Roderick Strong, after his match, walking up to Tony Khan in the back, with Christopher Daniels standing right there. He goes up to Tony is at the gorilla position, and he's pleading his case for why he should get a shot at the AEW world title, and Tony agrees to give him a championship match with Swerve Strickland on Dynamite this Wednesday. He sold Tony on the idea of getting a title match by saying that Tony was neck strong, just like him. This is how we're making world championship matches now. Maybe it would have made a little more sense for him to go and ask Matt and Nick and have them gift him the title shot, right? I mean, after all, it was the Bucks who picked Christian Cage. And the last time we had seen Christian Cage, he had lost the TNT title to Adam Copeland. And then all of a sudden he was challenging for the world title. But you could argue it by saying, well, the Bucks are flexing their muscle. And so they awarded him a title shot, right? It was them. It was not Tony Khan. You could have done the exact same thing here. They're still EVPs. It's not like they don't have any power just because Daniels is the temporary EVP. Why not go to the Bucks? And the Bucks do the same thing, trying to fuck over Swerve Strickland again. Yeah, we'll give you a world title match. Even though he just lost his title to Will Ospreay last weekend at Double or Nothing. But they didn't do that. But that's not even the real issue I have with this. If they are going to make it obvious that Tony Khan is sitting right there at Gorilla every week, then what the fuck does he need Christopher Daniels to be the interim EVP for? Like, if they're going to walk right up to Tony anyway, what is the point? It took them all of 3 days to render Christopher Daniels completely useless, completely impotent on this show. Way to go. But they said that there would be qualifying matches for a multi-man ladder match to take place at Forbidden Door on June 30th. Kenosuke Takeshita has already qualified for it with his win over Penta on Rampage. Takeshita would be a fine choice to be TNT champion. I think Ricky Starks belongs in that match as well. He'd be a great choice, but I still think it's going to end up being Jack Perry. I'm sticking by my guns here. I think Perry was going to be the one to beat Copeland for the belt. I'm telling you, it was going to be him. So this doesn't change anything other than it would have been a big win for him because of how protected Copeland has been for Perry to pin him in the middle of the ring, and now he can't do that. but I still think the title ends up on him. And the Forbidden Door card is already shaping up well. You know, they announced Mercedes against Stephanie Vaquer, as I said before, the current CMLL Women's World Champion and New Japan Strong Women's Champion. They have wrestled before once in the tournament last year to crown the first ever Strong Women's Champion. Mercedes beat her on her way to the finals, which is where she broke her ankle in the match with Willow. So we're getting that match at Forbidden Door. We've got the ladder match for the TNT title. And in the main event, it is not the match that I was expecting this soon, but I wanted them to give Swerve a good program, right? Isn't that what I said? I said he needs a good program coming out of Double or Nothing where he could finally be the focus. Well, he certainly got that. Swerve Strickland will defend the AEW World Championship against the winner of the Casino Gauntlet match on Dynamite. That is what we were told, and that turned out to be Will Ospreay. I didn't see that coming. Ospreay won the first Casino Gauntlet back in April for a shot at the international title. He went on to win. On Wednesday, he was part of another Casino Gauntlet, which was excellent, by the way. A really fun main event. We got Pac and Jay White to kick things off in the gauntlet. Mystico was a surprise. Leo Rush was a surprise. Shota Umino from New Japan. Hell, Ospreay was a surprise. And the fans were into it. Every person who came out, all the names I just mentioned, you might go, oh, what are they doing in there? Let me tell you something. They came into this match one by one, and these people were going crazy for all of them. And it makes sense because it's Forbidden Door season, so of course, they're going to be bringing in names like this. But Ospreay wins the gauntlet, and now it will be champion against champion. So why this soon? Why not wait until Wembley? My assumption, my hope, is that there is a plan here. There is a method to the madness to get two matches out of it instead of just one. And if that's the case, I'm okay with that. I don't know if that's the case or not. Now, they could always have Ospreay beat Swerve at Forbidden Door and then have MJF go on to challenge Will Ospreay at Wembley Stadium, right? They're two biggest babyfaces. I think that would be a big mistake. I think that would be too rushed. And I think that would be a total slap in the face for Swerve Strickland. What I think they may do, and what I hope they do, is have Swerve win the first match at Forbidden Door, and maybe even resort to cheating to keep his title. Maybe Swerve goes back to being a heel again. But you have Will Ospreay's first loss in the company come at the hands of Swerve Strickland. We have the Owen Hart Foundation tournaments coming up. The finals are taking place in Calgary on July 10th at the Saddledome. Both tournaments this year are for world championship matches at All In at Wembley Stadium. You have Will Ospreay, fresh off this loss to Swerve, does whatever he has to do to win. Ospreay enters the Owen and he wins, and he earns the right to challenge Swerve one more time on his home soil, and he wins the title at Wembley Stadium. If Will Ospreay is going to win the world title, to do it anywhere but Wembley would be stupid. Incredibly stupid and short-sighted. To do it in New York when you're this close to London would be one of the most asinine decisions that Tony Khan has ever made. So I'm fine with them doing the first match at Forbidden Door, if it is the first. I mean, I wanted Swerve to get a good feud going. There is no better opponent for him right now on that show than Will Ospreay. Tony Khan and Martha Hart, they did announce last Sunday that the men's and women's Owen Hart tournament winners will each get a world championship match at Wembley. I like it. I think it should be that way every year going forward. But they need to load those things up with big names. Will Ospreay needs to be in that tournament. MJF, who just came back, should absolutely be in there. Samoa Joe, as a former AEW World Champion, he should be in there too. Bryan Danielson, Christian Cage, just challenged for the title, but put him in there too. Why not? Jay White, maybe. Those are the kinds of names that they need in that tournament. I'm sticking with Will Ospreay as my pick on the men's side. On the women's side, it's either going to be Mariah May or Jamie Hayter, assuming that she might be back soon. I've been assuming that she was going to be back soon since February, though, so I don't know what the fuck is going on with her. But we're getting closer to Wembley. I'm hoping they're saving her as a surprise, maybe for the Owen, right? And she's former AEW Women's World Champion. She's looking to get her belt back in her home country from the woman who took it from her. It was Toni Storm who beat her for the belt, right? What an easy way it would be to reintroduce her into the title picture by having her win the entire tournament. But if she's still not ready, then it has to be Mariah May. And if they end up doing, let's just say they end up doing, and I guess they are doing it. I think they made it official last night. Tony Storm is going to wrestle Mina Shirakawa of Stardom at Forbidden Door. And we know that Mariah May and Mina are very close friends. Given Mina's relationship with Mariah, if they're going to do that match at Forbidden Door with Mina and Tony, it's easy to see them using that as a way to start the build to Mariah May against Tony Storm in London. There have been a few departures from AEW. Some contracts have come due. Where we talk about contracts and WWE coming due. There are some contracts that have come due and have not been renewed. And it sounds like in all three cases, the decision was mutual. Bodyslam.net was first to report that Jake Hager, who had been a member of the roster from the very first episode of Dynamite in 2019 when he joined the Inner Circle, he is gone from AEW. His contract expired, and the decision was said to be mutual between the two sides to part ways. This one is not surprising. I mean, he had gone as far as he was going to go there. What was left for him to do? You know, I went back and I watched his debut. I watched that final segment from the very first Dynamite with Jericho and Sammy Guevara and Santana and Ortiz all coming together, all beating up Cody and Dustin and the Elite. And then Hager comes out from the crowd. He lays a beat down on the baby faces. Jim Ross was great on the call. That arena, I think they were in DC that night. That arena looked packed. And you could tell it was packed because of how well lit it was. You know, when it's not packed these days, they don't light up the building as much. And man, there was just a vibe and an energy back then for that original show and those first Dynamites that it's just missing now. You know, it really hit me watching that. So Hager is gone. Mark Henry is gone. On Busted Open Radio, he said, "My contract with AEW is set to expire tomorrow, the 28th. Tony Khan said at the press conference that he was very happy and proud of what we did together, and I feel exactly the same way. I appreciate everything that happened at AEW with Tony Khan and the Khan family. I had a great experience, and I do feel that it's time for me to take more time to handle themarkhenry.com and the Remarkable brand and focus that attention on what my next steps are. And I am not going to be renewing my deal. I think it's a mutual thing. If I can't dedicate 100% to myself or of myself, then it's only fair for both parties to end the relationship on a positive note. And like I said, it's been nothing but positive." He also said, "I am not leaving pro wrestling. What I'm saying is that I'm going to take some time to work on some projects, and I'm going to come back again full force because that's what I do." When they brought him in originally, they tried him out as a commentator, and that did not work out. That's when they transitioned him into the backstage correspondent role on Rampage, and he would interview either party, you know, kind of like via satellite. They had one person in one window, one in the other. Henry was in the middle, and then he would end it with, "It's time for the main event," right? That was his go-to line, and people would pop for it. But he would also lend help to whoever he could behind the scenes. His real strength, okay, and I mean that he's the world's strongest man. He's a strong guy. But his real strength, he has got a great eye for talent and for scouting, especially athletes that he thinks would make good wrestlers. He discovered Bianca Belair, and what he does is he'll just reach out to them on social media. He'll send them a DM or a tweet or whatever. That's what he did with Bianca. He saw some of the stuff that she was doing, I guess in college, and said, "She's an incredible athlete. She could have a real aptitude for this." And he reached out to her, and it just went from there. You know, and he had a hand in similar with Jade Cargill. I'm not sure how much Tony Khan was really utilizing him in that type of role. That's something I could definitely see, for example, WWE using him for, especially with a lot of the college athletes they're recruiting these days. He could be invaluable to them. But he just made an appearance last night at the MLW Battle Riot show with Teddy Long. There was a ritual combat match between Alex Shane and AJ Francis. And they came out on stage right before. I don't know if it was a one-off. I don't know if he's got more appearances planned with them. It could have just been a one-off surprise type of deal. Whatever Mark Henry ends up doing, he's going to be doing it with someone other than MLW. I mean, again, I wouldn't be shocked if he ended up doing something with WWE at the Performance Center. And I think he brings real value to a role like that. And Armed Anderson is gone from AEW. He announced on his podcast that May 31st was his last day on his contract. He said he wanted to focus on spending time with his son, Brock, who at one time was also working for AEW, and I believe his contract expired and was not renewed. Arn said, "The limited time I have left, I want to spend with Brock because I think Brock has aptitude and attitude, and I think that he will be a big player for somebody." Well, I mean, every father thinks that about their kid. "I think he will be a big player for somebody. I just got to get him some experience, and that's where I'm going to devote my time. And if he comes along like I think and hope he will, it will be sooner than later." Sure makes those recent Cody Rhodes comments more interesting, doesn't it? It was only a week ago. Cody was on Busted Open and said about his time with Arn in AEW, he said, "It was nice to have that voice in your ear. It was something I missed when Logan and I were doing the contract signing segment, to see him flanked by so many people. Maybe I'm looking for the classic wrestling manager to join me on this title reign. I don't know who that is or what that is." It sounds like Cody may be about to get his Jose Lothario for his title run. It's too bad Cody didn't have Arn for the build to WrestleMania when Rock was kicking his ass every week. Arn could have brought his Glock, spilled his brains out all over the concrete. And two more AEW talent-related notes to wrap this up here before we get to your questions. Back in 2020, I was tickled by this, so I wanted to mention this. Back in 2020, when everybody was under lockdown and losing their minds, Sebastian Bach, the former frontman for the band Skid Row, he got into a Twitter spat with Chris Jericho. And Jericho was a big fan of his, and evidently the feeling was not mutual. Jericho was like tweeting him and quote tweeting back and forth with him like they were fucking best buds. And then out of nowhere, Sebastian Bach made a comment of basically accusing Jericho of lip syncing. And Jericho at that point, he flipped his shit and he challenged him to a sing off that never happened. Well, recently, Bach was answering fan questions on the website Louder Sound and was asked if he would ever do that sing off with Chris Jericho. To which he replied, "The better question would be, will he do a wrestle-off with Sebastian Bach? Because I am as much of a wrestler as he is a singer." Ouch. Ouch. See, I'd much rather see Sebastian Bach in a wrestle-off than listen to him and Chris Jericho have a sing-off, to be perfectly honest with you. So I guess we'll see now. The ball is in Jericho's court to respond. And Missy Hyatt revealed this week on Rene Dupree's podcast that she and Jim Ross dated for a couple of years in 2019. That would have been 2 years after his wife Jan passed away. Missy said that the two of them dated for a couple of years. This would have been after he moved to Jacksonville when he first started working for AEW. And that he, quote, "rocked her world." By God, she's broken in half. Missy Hyatt and Jim Ross is not the relationship I would have ever guessed. You could have given me a multiple choice exam with three lifelines and a cheat code, and I still wouldn't have guessed that Missy Hyatt and Jim Ross would have been an item. Well, I guess that's one thing that JR and Jake the Snake now have in common, I guess. So there you go. That's your news of the week. That's what I got for you. And you know what else I have for you? I have a big-ass mailbag. That's what I got for you, because you guys had a lot of questions for me, and I like it. And keep emailing me, thesolemonster@gmail.com, but just make sure when you do, please, include your name and where you are from. If I just get a random question, I may or may not answer it. I'm more apt to answer it if you tell me who you are and where you're from. Like Tony from Los Angeles. "I wanted to run an idea by you for Clash at the Castle. During the Drew McIntyre-Damian Priest match, the referee is knocked out, and the Judgment Day come down to help Damian by trying to attack Drew, who ends up holding his own against them until CM Punk appears and tries to get in the ring to attack Drew, when suddenly Gallus appears to help Drew by attacking Punk and the Judgment Day. Drew wins the title and stands with Gallus to create a new heel faction on Raw. This could create a feud on Raw for a month between both factions while Punk still recovers from his injury. Putting Gallus with Drew could create a nice obstacle for Punk when he eventually is cleared to compete. Have Drew build it as Punk having no friends to help him, which sparks weeks of Punk trying to find partners to fend them off. What do you think? I would be down for a McIntyre-Gallus faction with McIntyre leading the charge. Put all the Scots together. I guess that's the idea. Well, I mean, WWE likes putting people together. I like the idea of Punk coming out to try to screw McIntyre, you know, because you have to know that it's coming, right? And so does Drew McIntyre. So it makes sense that he would plan ahead and he would take steps in Scotland to neutralize Punk by enlisting the help of Gallus, of all people, right? That's when Gallus then shows up and they gang up on Punk, and that clears the way for Drew to win the title. So I like that. I like that idea. I think that could work. Brandon in Chillicothe, Ohio. I know Orange Cassidy is feeling a little played out right now, especially with all the best friend stuff nobody asked for. With Drew Gulak now out of WWE, do you think we could see a new incarnation of the Ant Colony? If Tony Khan is willing to pay for Final Countdown on a loop, surely he can work something out with Chikara for their IP. Yeah, I mean, he could, but the Ant Colony stuff, it was a fun, silly, stupid indie gimmick that belongs on the indies. It worked in Chikara. It belongs on the indies. Keep that shit there. I don't need to see it on TV. But he also says, with TNA seeming to have a grassroots talent exchange with WWE and it being widespread, that Becky Two Belts is no longer under contract, do you see any chance that WWE could re-sign Becky but have her show up in TNA, making it look like she signed there to generate some buzz? I don't see that happening. It's the sort of thing that becomes possible, though, when two companies work together, which is one of the reasons why I like the working relationship between the two sides. But no. Becky wants to take time off. She's going to be gone for a while. I don't expect to see her pop up anywhere. And when she does, it will be on the main roster. I do not see her in TNA. Jay from Atlanta. This week is the 10-year anniversary of Seth Rollins turning on the Shield. During this time, Daniel Bryan is beginning to deal with his neck issues in the midst of his WWE title run, and is eventually stripped of the title a week later by the Authority, which leads to it being held up, going into Money in the Bank. My question is, did Bryan's injuries possibly speed up their split, and had he not gotten hurt and gone away, would the Shield have remained together a little bit longer in their initial run? I don't think so. I think they would have done the split when they did regardless. You know, the Shield guys were against it, by the way. They felt they had a longer babyface run in them, so did I. But if you look at what they did, when Bryan had to vacate the title, they put it on John Cena. And Cena then got squashed by Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. Had Daniel Bryan not gotten hurt, the plan was for him to get squashed by Brock Lesnar, not John Cena. And Brock was going to win the title all the same, and then start building up Roman Reigns, who Vince saw dollar signs in Roman Reigns, and start building him up on his own to win the Royal Rumble and then challenge for the title at WrestleMania. So I don't think that timeline changes at all, even if Bryan stayed healthy. I think it plays out exactly the way it did. Luke from Maricopa, Arizona. With what seemingly looks like a partnership between WWE and TNA, what are the odds that a main roster talent goes to TNA, even if only for a match or two? Personally, I would like to see AJ Styles wrestle someone like Josh Alexander and put them over at the 20th anniversary Bound for Glory show. Well, I can tell you one thing. If a main roster talent was to be loaned over to TNA for a show like that, they ain't losing. They're not sending AJ Styles over there to lose to Josh Alexander, okay? It's just not going to happen. Could we see main roster talents appear in TNA? It's possible. Right now, it looks like it's an NXT thing, not a main roster thing. AJ now has his story, you know, for the summer, basically, or at least for the next month or so with Cody Rhodes. So I don't see him ending up in TNA. I mean, he could make an appearance. It wouldn't shock me now that the lines of communication are open, 20th anniversary of Bound for Glory. Is it Bound for Glory? Is it 20 years of Bound for Glory? Because I know it's been more than 20 years for TNA. TNA started in 2002. So maybe Bound for Glory. Is it the 20th anniversary specifically of Bound for Glory? Yeah, maybe. I mean, maybe he can make an appearance, but main roster talent going to TNA events and losing? Yeah, that's not going to happen. Carlos from New York, with the current state of the WWE women's division on the main roster, do you think that there are women on the current roster who have hit their ceiling? For example, Shayna Baszler, Candice LeRae, Zelina Vega, who would benefit more from leaving WWE and going to Stardom, Marigold, or AEW to prove that they are bigger than their current roles? That's going to be up to the individual talent. What you're talking about is a Drew McIntyre type thing, where Drew got fired, he left, and then he made himself a bigger name and came back even bigger than he was before. You know, if any of these women are unhappy with their positions, they're free to leave when their contract comes due. No one's forcing them to put their name on the dotted line. So if they feel like they have more to offer and WWE isn't tapping into it, they're free to wait until their contracts are up and then go somewhere else and prove them wrong. Do I think that Candice LeRae and Zelina Vega are going to leave and have success and then come back in a much bigger spot? No, I don't. You know, Shayna Baszler, I think at this point, honestly, in WWE, and I hate to say it, but I think her age works against her. And you could say, well, that's not fair because there's a lot of guys in their 40s on the WWE roster who are killing it and doing well. They have a lot of talent in their 40s on the roster, but I do think in their eyes it's a different thing, I think, when it comes to the women. And I think that's something that is probably going to work against her. Shayna leaving and coming back, I think she'd be in the exact same spot that she's in now. So it all boils down to, is she happy doing what she's doing? She's being used. It's not like she's in catering in the back and we never see her, right? She's on the main roster. She's got a tag team title match banked right now with Zoe Stark. They're next in line. And she's also working Lola Vice in NXT. They're going to have an NXT Underground match at Battleground in a week. So they have her doing things. I don't see them going any higher than what they're doing now, whether they leave or not. I don't think that's going to change. Matey from New York, who had the better year in terms of quality matches? Steve Austin in 2001 or Roman Reigns in 2021? Roman had a lot of great matches that year with Daniel Bryan and with Edge. I think that was the year he had that pay-per-view match with Cesaro as well. But the answer is Steve Austin. The answer is Steve Austin in 2001. I would even argue that 2001 was Steve Austin's best year as an in-ring performer. In the ring, bell to bell, that was his best year. He had that excellent Three Stages of Hell match with Triple H in No Way Out. He had that classic WrestleMania 17 main event with The Rock. We got the two-man power trip against Jericho and Benoit for the tag team titles on Raw, which is still one of the greatest matches in Raw history. And right around that same time, a great singles match, I think it was on SmackDown, with Austin and Chris Benoit. And his SummerSlam match was excellent with Kurt Angle that year. And he had a few matches with Kurt. I think he beat Kurt for the title. No, I'm sorry. The beginning of the year, Kurt beat him. That's what it was. They had a title match, I think, on the first Raw that year. That's when Triple H came back with the game music for the first time. And then they went on to feud. But then he wrestled Kurt at SummerSlam, and then he lost the belt to Kurt. This was after 9/11. On that Unforgiven show. They wanted the great moment of the American hero, you know, weeks after the towers fell. He's, you know, he prevails and he wins the belt and they put him on their shoulders and everything. And then Austin won the belt right back a few weeks later. So he and Angle had like four singles matches that year between TV and pay-per-view. But I think SummerSlam is the best that they probably ever had. So he had a great year, Austin did. I can't put Roman above Austin that year. Kevin from Barbados, longtime listener, first-time emailer. What's going on, Kevin? Shout out also to Kevin and his friend Victor. Victor in Rochester, New York. They never miss a show, he says. I like hearing that. My question is a two-parter. With WWE doing more international shows, do you see them venturing deeper into the Caribbean to run shows? For example, in Barbados, Guyana, Trinidad, etc. Since Puerto Rico is in the Caribbean, but logistically, that was not considered an international show for a U.S.-based promotion. I think all options are on the table right now, Kevin. It comes down to whether they think they can sell tickets. Do they have an arena? Do they have a stadium big enough to accommodate, you know, a PLE? And I guess it doesn't have to be a PLE. I mean, it could be a live event, too. But are they getting paid by the local government to bring the show in? You know, I don't know what kind of audience WWE has in Barbados or in Guyana. It might be very small. It probably is very small. In which case, they're not going to run there. You know, it's just they're not going to prioritize places where they don't have a big following. It also doesn't mean that, like I said, it has to be a PLE. They could come in and run some live events, test the market, see how they do. If they don't sell well, they don't have to go back there. But those are the most important factors. Do I see them running there anytime soon? I don't. Puerto Rico has always been a hotbed for pro wrestling for many years. I don't know about all the other areas you mentioned, but that's why they ran Puerto Rico, or one of the reasons why they ran Puerto Rico. Kevin's second question. I've been a fan of Julia since 2019 when she made the controversial jump from Ice Ribbon to Stardom, and I have been following her career ever since. I've always been iffy about her eventually going to WWE with how Hideki Suzuki, who happens to be a mentor and close friend of hers, and Saray, were treated as expendable and joined the long list of signings that WWE did not know what to do with and are no longer with the company. Would you say that you have faith in WWE to push and showcase Julia to the heights that Asuka and Io have reached? Because when Saray was signed, I heard they had a world of creative plans for her, but all of that amounted to her being a Japanese schoolgirl that transformed with a magic medallion. Yeah, I don't know where things went wrong with Saray. I guess that gimmick. I guess we could point to exactly where they went wrong with Saray. The fucking Sailor Moon gimmick was a fail from day one. And apparently she's killing it now in Japan. You know, she's doing well. I do have faith. I do have faith in them doing well by Julia. I think that they're a lot higher on her than they were Saray. I don't know how exclusive Julia is going to be to them, so how far she goes is going to depend on what kind of contract she signs. Is she going to split her time between NXT and Marigold for the foreseeable future, or are they eventually going to get her full time under contract? If they eventually get her full time, then the world is her oyster, as they say. Like, she's incredibly marketable, she's great in the ring, you know, hits hard. There's no reason to think that she can't have an Asuka-type run in NXT. And then even on the main roster. You know, I've heard her speak English. She's not fluent or anything, but she's not that bad. I think she needs to keep working on that, because the better she gets at it, the better off she's going to be in that company. But the sky's the limit for her. You know, I have faith in Shawn Michaels to do right by her, and I have faith in Triple H to do right by her if she ever gets called up. I think she's going to do well. Kyle from Bridgeville, Delaware. If WWE never moved back to the USA Network in 2005, do you think TNA Wrestling would have gotten a deal with another network? And if so, which network do you think it would have been? Possibly USA. It's impossible to know. Do I think USA would have just snatched up TNA because they love wrestling so much? I don't think so. I don't think they would have ended up on USA. And so I don't know what other networks would have been viable for them back then. If, you know, because what you're saying is if WWE stayed on Spike, which is where TNA ended up, outside of USA, I mean, would the Turner networks have been interested in wrestling? Probably not. That was only a few years after they basically shit-canned wrestling. So I that would have been awful quick for them to bring wrestling back to their channels. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that TNA would have had as great of a television home in that case. I think WWE moving back to USA was the best thing that could have happened to them. Rabat from Derby, England. In 1995, if Triple H had never or did not have a non-compete clause, I'm going to get this right, from WCW, when he signed with WWE, then what do you think of my idea for Triple H's WrestleMania debut to be at WrestleMania 11 and have him wrestle Chris Candido as the opening match for 12 minutes with Triple H getting the win? Boy, that's oddly specific there. It's almost like you've booked out the entire show. No, I would not have I would have debuted him exactly the way that they did. You build him up with vignettes, building to a debut on TV. You build that character up. You build him up with squash matches. He wasn't a big enough deal to where a WrestleMania debut would have mattered. Candido had not yet debuted as one half of the Body Donnas. I think the Body Donnas were like May or June is when they debuted on TV. I would have loved it if you would have just come in as Chris Candido with Tammy Sitch as his manager without the dumb gimmick. He didn't need the dumb gimmick. You know, him with Tammy as his heel valet, I think he would have done far better without the stupid gimmick. But that, hey, you're talking 1995, okay? We have the Connecticut Blue Blood. We have the Body Donnas. We have a garbage man. We have an evil dentist. We have a plumber. We had a failed hockey player in the Goon. Who am I missing? I know I'm missing a few. I mean, it was the year of terrible gimmicks. It was the wrong time. If Candido had come in a year later, he might have been spared. Kevin from Washington, D.C. Can you see a scenario playing out until next year's WrestleMania where Nia Jax defeats Bayley at SummerSlam, setting up Charlotte to eventually return and beat her? Tiffany Stratton then cashes in Money in the Bank on Charlotte, all for Charlotte to get oh-so-glorious number 16 at WrestleMania 41. I think that there is a very good chance that happens. And not only have I been pitching Tiffany Stratton to win Money in the Bank this year, but I've been saying it for weeks. We're going to get queen versus queen. Charlotte is going to come back. She's going to be on SmackDown. She is the queen. There's only room for one. It's the natural build to a feud with Nia Jax. And yes, I think that padding her resume is what they're going to do. I mean, they've already done it. It gets her closer to 16. I think they would love for her to hit 16 at WrestleMania. I think that's exactly what they're going to do. We got Double A-Ron from Gainesville, Florida. As we have come and gone with the one-year anniversary of the passing of Bray Wyatt, I've often wondered, had Bray not passed away, do you think he would have been involved in the Cody Rhodes-Roman Reigns-WrestleMania Bloodline Rules match? Maybe The Fiend would have given The Rock a mandible claw or a Sister Abigail instead of The Undertaker giving a chokeslam? No. No. Undertaker, I think they wanted Steve Austin. I think Steve Austin didn't want to do it or didn't like the offer that was made, didn't like the creative, whatever it was. That spot was tailor-made for Stone Cold Steve Austin. When they couldn't get Austin, Undertaker was the next logical star in the pecking order. You know, that would have been a much bigger deal than The Fiend showing up. And I know, you know, Roman Reigns, his whole title reign started by beating The Fiend and Braun Strowman. So I get it. I get that it kind of brings it full circle, you know, and you have him be involved in some way. And if he's not going to be the one to beat Roman, he can cost Roman the title. But I don't think very many people would have cared about that, to be honest with you. I think it played out exactly the way that it should have. And I don't think that it's impossible to know. You're asking me to predict something that they hadn't even thought about. I don't know what Bray would have been doing, but I don't think he would have been involved with any of this. Brian from Utah. We'll end with him. Just saw a video of Undertaker's podcast where he's going over the idea of a WWE roast during WrestleMania weekend due to the success of the Tom Brady roast on Netflix recently. He floated some different ideas such as John Cena, Triple H, Rock, and possibly even himself being roasted. I used to think that a Vince McMahon roast would have been amazing, but don't think that it would happen anymore due to all of the scandals around his name. Brian, you don't have to think, buddy. It will never happen. I'm telling you right now. You will never, ever see a Vince McMahon roast hosted by WWE on any platform. It will not happen. So you can safely check that one off the list. Who do you think would be a big enough name for the first WWE roast? And do you think they would ever actually do it? I think in the Endeavor era, I certainly think doing more adult-oriented stuff like that is on the table. Not on TV, but as a streaming event, let's say on Peacock or on Netflix. I mean, they have the deal with Netflix for Raw, so who knows? You know, they may make more deals with Netflix. I don't think now is the time for it, though. You know, with a sex trafficking lawsuit hanging over their heads to roast people like Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker and joke about old road stories. If you really wanted to roast the old guard, I don't think it would be wise to do that right now. Unless you want to have a watered-down PG roast. I think telling all the sex, drugs, and rock and roll stories may not be the best idea. But yeah, you mentioned like Triple H, for example. You mentioned Triple H as one of the potential roasties. That one's tough because, you know, he's one of the head honchos there now. And depending on who's doing the roasting, I could see people holding back, you know, and not wanting to really unload on the guy given his position there. Rock, I can't imagine Rock being roasted. I feel like his ego would not allow it. I really don't. I feel like he would have a list of rules of what not to say. You know, like a Rock roast, I don't think is going to work. I feel like the ego there is probably a little too fragile. But yeah, probably not the best time to be roasting some of those older guys. Great stuff, though. Keep emailing me. TheSolemonster@gmail.com is the place where you can reach me. Of course, you can find me here each and every Sunday. And of course, on YouTube. Multiple times during the week. Now we hit the reset button. It's a brand new month. So let's have the biggest and best June that we possibly can on the channel. And if you are not a subscriber there, please make sure you go ahead and do so. I'll be live Monday, Wednesday, and Friday this week. Thankfully, the House of Glory show on Saturday does not interfere with any of those live streams. Of course, I'll be live on Tuesday night with JD on his channel. For Tuesday Night Titans, our fifth episode together. May was our first month of doing shows. They have been very well received. I think it's a good dialogue, a good back and forth that we have on a lot of these topics of the week. So thank you for all the kind feedback to that. I'll be live with him on Tuesday night and back here next Sunday for episode 865 of the Solemonster Sounds Off. So until then, be well, stay safe. Have yourselves a fantastic week, and we'll do it all over again for 865 in 7 days. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solemonster Sounds Off.
Why do you care about what other people do with their bodies? It's weird. The man is a grown adult. He can do whatever he wants. Why do you care? Why is it your business to comment and to talk about? It's not your knees. You shouldn't tell him what to do. This is what I do. I sit here and I talk about pro wrestling. The good, the bad, and the ugly. And I comment on these shows and I give my thoughts and I opine. This man is not going to give you a hand job, no matter how many times you may try to kiss his ass. All right, I promise you, it's almost feeding time. Put the pacifier in your mouth. Your mother is gonna squeeze one out and you'll eat very soon. You're probably very hangry. I understand that right now, okay? But let me do what I do. You people are fucking weird as shit. You know that? You really are. You really need some psychological help. Holy shit.
The Solemonster Sounds Off. Each week, bursting with content. Podcasts, predictions, reviews, YouTube live streams, and more. Become a channel member for perks and follow The Solemonster on Twitter @Solemonster.
Solemonster.
Solemonster.
Solemonster Sounds Off.